Waiting around for your online delivery to get to your house? You don't need Hank to come in and attach a tracking device. You can follow all of your shipments on Amazon.com. Get the best deal on everything you need for back to school and more. And help support Rob as a podcast when you start your shopping at robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. Coming to you live from Walter White's old house, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who always has an A1 day, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome to our first ever Breaking Bad recap podcast here on Rob Has a Podcast. At this point, I am hoping that you have seen Breaking Bad Season 5.2's season premiere, Blood Money. There will be spoilers galore here in the next however long this takes to discuss it. And here with me is a man who is a Breaking Bad expert and a my co-host for this adventure, and a much like Saul Goodman, an attorney at law. Here is Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how are you?
How's it going, Rob? Yeah, I am exactly like Saul Goodman. That's the kind of attorney I am. I like to play the battle hymn of the Republic in my waiting room. I like Asian massage. I'm just like him.
So I should ask the question, is your barn door open?
Currently, at the moment, there is no barn door, Rob. You can only see the top half of my body.
Oh, no. Oh, boy. Antonio, so this is very exciting. We are going to be doing this every week. I don't know if we're going to do a Google Hangout every week, but I figured this would be fun just to get this out there, you know, help spread the word that we're going to do this. We're going to recap every episode of these. Only 7 episodes left to go. So if you want to subscribe to the audio feed, I'm going to put these in the Rob Has a Podcast main feed, which for iTunes is at robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Or if you want, if you just found this on YouTube and you're like, I don't care about any of these reality shows, I just want to hear Breaking Bad from this complete stranger that I just stumbled across his videos, you could subscribe to just the Breaking Bad feed of Rob as a Podcast. Go to robhasawebsite.com/Breaking Bad, and that will take you to the audio feed. Or you could subscribe to our YouTube feed here by just clicking the subscribe button. Or if you're listening to the audio, go to robhasawebsite.com/YouTube. All right, Antonio, let's jump right into this. I know how to podcast about Survivor or Big Brother. Some would say, others would say maybe I should go to the drawing board on that, but to podcast about Breaking Bad, I think we just have to jump right into the, you know, it was sort of a slower 55 minutes or so here. It went by quick, although there was not a lot of tension. But then, boom, once we get to Hank's house in the garage, once the garage door starts to close, boy, a very exciting last 6 or 7 minutes here of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, the moment everyone's going to be talking about when we're talking about this episode in the next few days is the tread lightly moment. You know, the moment where Walt and Hank kind of finally throw their, you know, cards on the table and put it all out there. And Walt had every opportunity to walk away from that moment. He could have just kind of taken the high road a little bit and creeped him out. And I think a lot of other shows would have let their character kind of walk right out. But Walt just had to turn back around. Had to bring that, you know, tracking device up, and then the garage door comes down and everything started to really escalate quite quickly.
Yeah, it was like Walter White had his Columbo moment where he's about to leave and like, just one more thing, I gotta say. I really was surprised that we got as far into this in this episode as we did. Like, you know, Hank is like starting to, by, you know, 5 or 10 minutes into it, he's starting to figure everything out. I thought that maybe it would take more than an episode for Hank to really put all the pieces together, but he very quickly does that. I thought it would take longer for Walt to realize that Hank was onto him. That happens by the time he can't find the book in this episode. And then I thought it would take several more episodes for us to have a confrontation between Walt and Hank about all this, but I'm glad that we did it this way. Get all of the foreplay out of the way, because we all knew this was where it was going. Get it all out there in the first episode.
That's very romantic of you, Rob. Yes, get all the foreplay out of the way. That's right. No, I do think that that's the way to go. And I think it's true to the characters. You know, the way that Hank is, it almost has been harder to believe that the wool was pulled so far over his eyes with regard to Walt. So when the wool got pulled back just a little bit, he sees everything really quickly. And I think we'll talk about it here shortly, but I really like the montage where Hank is looking through all the evidence, and it reads like Walter White's greatest hits. You know, we see all these pictures and all these dead bodies and all these characters and things that we've seen, and we really see how Hank is building that chain. So it didn't surprise me at all that he put it together very quickly.
Yes, it was almost like they didn't even have to do it previously on for this episode, that they could have just had Hank go through the file folders of the first five seasons of Breaking Bad. And now Hank is almost like Carrie from Homeland, and he's going to be putting up like a cork board in his garage of like putting all the pieces together.
Yeah, who knew Breaking Bad could do a clip show? yeah, it was a little bit like Carrie from Homeland. It was that sort of, you know, manic kind of moment, and the music fit really well with that. And Hank is just kind of throwing different pieces of evidence around, and, you know, looking at this picture and casting it aside and then pulling this one in, and very much just kind of standing in his garage going crazy. So that's a very good comparison.
All right, so we'll break down the episode blow by blow, but let's stick with Hank and Walt in the garage. Where does this go from here now? I mean, we saw what happened. You would imagine that Walt, the next episode Walt will not still be in the garage. Walt will leave. For both of these guys, let's just talk through what we think is the next action for both of them. And I guess let's start with Hank. What does Hank do from here?
It's very interesting because Walt really put Hank in a difficult position. And we sort of teased this on our preview where we recapped our top five moments and talked about what we thought could happen. But Walt's kind of put Hank in a position where Walt is saying, Hank, I'm going to be dead in, you know, 6 months. So are you really going to put yourself in this position? And Hank sort of gave him the out, like, bring your kids here and then maybe we'll talk about what we can do. So I'm not sure if Hank's going to try to outmaneuver him or outflank him from a family standpoint and maybe try to shift, you know, the weight, because he's going to start putting together that Skyler nose, right? And once he's, you know, putting together that Skyler nose, I think the question will become, you know, whether he feels like she's complicit or whether he finally sees like the falling into the pool and all the things that he can remember as a cry for help. And if he does see it that way, he may take different action, you know, outside the family or within the family versus the whole DEA action, which will be a completely different thing. What are your thoughts on what Hank can do?
I don't know. I mean, I guess, does Hank want to, you know, file a formal case? Because, you know, I always felt like with all of this, the worst part of all is like this kind of really, really makes Hank look very bad. You know, yes, it would be Hank crack the case. But at the end of the day, you kind of say, Hank, so your brother-in-law was the guy that you've been chasing for the last 5 years and you never knew? You never put two and two together? That this, like, it's almost like, I kind of feel like Hank's career, it hangs in the balance here. And I don't even think he's thinking about that, but this is not a good reflection on Hank.
Right, and not only that, but Hank has profited personally from it. His medical care was paid for with this, what the episode is called, blood money. And that paid for Hank's medical care. And I don't know that Hank, that all of that has occurred to Hank yet, but certainly a lot of that came rushing, you know, into Hank and caused him to have what would probably be described as a panic attack in the car that led to the wreck early in the episode. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of that is definitely present, and those stakes are definitely there on that level. So it really puts Hank in an untenable position. If he is going to bring some sort of case, he's got to admit some great degree of personal failure and stupidity, as well as the fact that he definitely benefited from it. And that's going to be really difficult for a guy like Hank to stomach.
All right, so let's go to Walt. Let's go to the more interesting side of the equation. What is his next move?
Yeah, Walt is, in some cases, he's a lot like the man who he dethroned, Gus Fring. He is in a position where you know, he's sort of letting people come to him mm-hmm. with how, you know, they want to do business or they want to react. And, you know, he's in a position now where he knows that Hank knows, but he's intimidated Hank to a point. And I think that if he feels that that intimidation that he put forth, the if you don't know who I am, maybe your best course would be to tread lightly line. If that doesn't really take and he feels like Hank is pushing him some more, I guarantee you the Walter White that we know will push back harder. But it's interesting, we have a little bit of information here, right? Because the episode started with the cold open. So we know that, you know, he's been exposed. People know that Walter White is Heisenberg. And people know that, you know, this sort of thing has happened. So something has happened. The information is out there, whether it's because Hank leaked it, you know, anonymously or whether because the case was brought to light, something has happened. So we know at some point Walter gets outmaneuvered or outflanked.
Well, I think that the whole theme of season five, at least the first half of it, was that after Walt kills Gus Fring, he has now assumed the throne, and now he has become Gus. And I think it could not have been a coincidence that in the scene where Walt is throwing up, he goes and, you know, the chemotherapy is making him sick. He lays the towel on the ground to put his knees on the same exact way that Gus Fring did when he went down to Mexico and poisoned the cartel with the tequila.
No doubt.
Yes, that he has become Gus.
It was also interesting, and that was a dead-on visual connection. There was also somewhat of a connection when Lydia was coming to the car wash to visit with Walt, and he was talking nothing but business, car wash business with her.
Yeah.
And she was coming at him with questions about the drug trade. It reminded, you know, of when Walt came into Los Pollos Hermanos and was coming at Gus with her, or, you know, with all those questions about the drug trade, and Gus just wanted to talk about chicken. So, you know, it's very, very reminiscent for sure. And I definitely think that if we know anything from Gus Fring, the parable is that all empires must fall. So it's very difficult, I think, to see as the audience, we know that this is coming. And so it's natural to think that, you know, that's what will happen. As he has become Gus, someone or something will take him down, just like Gus got taken down. Yeah.
Also, we are live right now. If you want to submit your questions for Antonio and myself, we have the chat room going on robiswebsite.com, or you can go ahead and submit your questions on the YouTube video. We can put them up on the screen if you leave your comments on the YouTube page at robiswebsite.com/YouTube. Okay, and we do have some questions coming, and we'll bring them up as we go along here. So some great questions. Let's go to the second top. If that was the lead story, I think probably story number two, as you mentioned, was the flash forward. Okay, which we assume picks up from the season five part one premiere of Walt. It's his 52nd birthday. He goes to Denny's or IHOP or whatever. He gets breakfast. He picks up the what do you call that? What kind of gun is that?
I think it's an M6. It's the same gun Rambo had. I think it's an M60.
Yeah.
And it's the Rambo gun. And that'll chop through the jungle for sure.
Yes. And as we discussed at length in the preview podcast, one of your big mysteries for the season is what happens to the ricin. We know Breaking Bad is not the kind of show to leave us hanging like that. So Walt goes to the house. It has been in great disrepair. It is a disaster. There is spray-painted Heisenberg on the walls, and Walt breaks in. And he goes and takes the ricin. Now, why would you need ricin when you already have a machine gun?
It's a very good question. And it makes one wonder if that's not for himself. Although ricin poisoning is kind of a weird way to take yourself out, considering I think Walt has said it would take about 3 days. So I'm not 100% sure exactly what he plans to do with that. But it may be one of those you know, two different purposes. I saw somewhere speculated on the internet that maybe he was just being a nice guy for a future homeowner there. And I think that's really laughable because the Walter White we know is not cleaning that ricin up lest someone else find it. He's definitely picking it up for a purpose, whether it's to use on himself and go on a 3-day rampage and die at the end of it, or whether it's to secretly take someone out.
Mm-hmm. Here's a question that is coming to me from on my Twitter from Dylan at Apple Cow Prodigy. He says, I noticed that Walt said he would die in 6 months, and aren't we about 6 months away from his 52nd birthday and the flash forward? So do we think that Walter may have more time than he believes?
Yeah, I think it's a little further. I think it's somewhere around 9 months, because at one point in the episode, you know, the timeline of the episode that's happening currently, he wishes the workers at the car wash a happy new year. And I think his birthday is sometime in the late summer, you know, or early fall. So that would put him, I think, around 9 months out at that point. So just like before, I think it seems to me that he's given himself more time. So it's always possible that he was just feeding Hank a line, like, I've only got 6 months, you know, like that's what you would say in that circumstance if you were looking for that sort of sympathy. You would give yourself 3 months if you had to, you know what I mean? Like, you would say the lowest thing you could say. So it's possible that he lied to Hank in that moment simply to manipulate him. We've seen him do it 1,000 times.
Yeah, going back to that scene, is Walt's next move going to be to kill Hank?
It's something that I think when I realized that Hank, you know, was putting it all together, and then when I realized that Walt knew that Hank knew, it's something that is perhaps inevitable at that point. I don't know that it'll be his next move. There was some talk, I think, and this is not a spoiler, before season 5, that Dean Norris kind of wanted off the show, and Vince Gilligan said, no, you're vital to this show, and especially where we want to take it. So I don't think that they have any plans to write the character out early into this part of this season, but it's certainly something I think that they could get to pretty quickly if they wanted to.
If Walt wanted to kill Hank, how many episodes into this last run do you think, I mean, do you think that it could be something that comes as quickly as next week, or you think that would be something that would wait until the finale?
I definitely think that it's something that he could do within the next couple of episodes. I don't think that it would wait for the finale. I think, like the cousins in season 3, I think once you put like those two kind of forces on that sort of trajectory, I'm not sure that's something that'll last. But then again, I think the cousins lasted until episode 7 or so. So with these shortened 8-episode seasons, I think anything's possible. One of the things they do, though, in the 8 episodes is they speed the storytelling up. So I think that it's entirely possible that if Walt were going to do it, he could do it in these next few episodes for sure.
So where do we think Walt could be going with the ricin? He has a machine gun. He has ricin. If he was going to take the ricin himself, you would think that those two things would not, like, let's say he's going to go somewhere and he's going to take a bunch of guys out. You would not then take ricin then to off yourself in that sort of scenario.
Right. I think it's possible that he doesn't want to face justice. So he's going to do something that, you know, he knows will result in him ultimately, you know, taking the fall for something. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of the coward's way out. It's not a slow coward. It's not a quick coward's way out. Like, you know,
but
a Nazi
if
soldier,
you're
like,
off
knocking
yourself,
his teeth aside.
Well, I mean, and you have a gun. Why wouldn't you,
yeah,
like, I would think that would be much more painful to die of a ricin attack. This isn't like, you know, taking a bunch of pills. And people are going to say, boy, Rob, you really seem to know a lot about offing yourself. But I think that, you know, you would not, ricin poisoning seems like a slow, painful death as opposed to, you know, offing yourself with a gun, which he seems to have a very fine one in his vehicle.
Yeah, he probably, I mean, part of what it could be is he probably could just have some sort of desire to arm himself with any weapons necessary for any moment. If you'll remember, I think one of the last times we saw the ricin, he brought it to his meeting with Lydia, and he was ready to just kind of drop it in there. Not that he needed her to go right away, but he wasn't sure if he wanted her to remain alive. So it was one of those things where he was ready to put it in her cup of tea if he had to. Mm-hmm. And so it's possible that he just wants to have, you know, every method at his disposal. Maybe he wants the gun to shoot up a building. And then when he gets in the building, if he's got to sit down with somebody and he's got their attention, you know, maybe then he uses the ricin. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe he just wants to torture Brock again. I have no idea.
Poor Brock. Did you think that there was any symbolism to the kids skateboarding in the swimming pool? The swimming pool featured prominently in the 2nd season with the teddy bear floating in it. Did you think that anything to a bunch of punks hanging out in the pool?
Well, the only symbolism I thought to the skateboarding was the line, I think, from the premiere, the first ever episode, the pilot, where Walter Jr., you know, where Skyler says to Walter Jr. about his jeans, like, I think they're tight, they're skinny, that's what all the skaters are wearing, right? And he says, do I look like a skater? You know, so I thought maybe we might see some Walter Jr. skateboard action, but we didn't get that, so it was a little bit disappointing.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go through the episode and let's talk through some of the more interesting points. So in this first, we have the flash forward, which is Walt's 52nd birthday. He's got the machine gun. He's got the ricin. Heisenberg in spray paint. Now, how could that happen to a house? I mean, who would do something like that? Like the punks that take over your house, the kids in the gangs, they spray paint your walls with your name?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I mean, it really speaks to that whatever happened must have been very high profile, that people who maybe didn't even know him, it's almost like his house has been turned into some sort of like shrine to his memory, or some sort of like place where people like really associate with him. And I mean, to this point, the name Heisenberg hasn't even been in the news.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for the general public to know that the name Heisenberg is out there, this whole thing really has to have broken wide open at some point.
Now, do people go there and do meth? That's like basically like the greatest place ever to go do meth is at Heisenberg's house, and that's sort of like it's like a flop house to go and get high.
Like the people who get drunk on Jim Morrison's grave,
yeah,
in Paris.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it probably that's is
perfect.
It's probably just like that. Yeah, I think that's probably accurate. You know, like that's if I were a meth user in Albuquerque, I know that's where I would want to go. So.
Right. Because also, I mean, they're not writing on the wall like Heisenberg sucks or anything like that. Like, you know, F you Heisenberg. They're like Heisenberg. Like, it seems like it's a shrine to him.
Right. Right. That's definitely, you know, just I think that when I saw that, the first thing that I thought was, well, shit, this got broken wide open at some point.
Yeah.
Like, this is really, and the house is in such disrepair. Everything is gone. Like, and so you don't know if like the DEA has come in and taken everything out of the house, or have looters come in for pieces of memorabilia that they can sell on eBay. Like, here's Heisenberg's, you know, breakfast bar. Here's Heisenberg's,
no, Walt
you
Jr.'s
know,
breakfast bar.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, exactly. You know, and so it's very odd. Like, maybe that's what has happened, you know, like maybe there really have been squatters and looters and people that are coming in because this is a really notorious guy, you know, like America's biggest drug kingpin takedown. But then again, maybe it's just the DEA has come in and just removed everything from the house. There's no real way to know, but something big has happened for sure. And I don't think the DEA spray painted Heisenberg on the wall.
Probably not. and most of all of this was very upsetting to Carol. Carol, really, she's just besides herself. She drops her groceries when Walter White says, hello, Carol.
Oh, and the great moment really after the cold open was when we saw her, you know, in the current timeline watering her lawn, and it was very pleasant. Oh, hi, Walter, you know?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. One thing about that in the cold open, when she drops her groceries, she drops the bag and the oranges fall out. And of course, oranges are kind of a TV and film trope, starting back to The Godfather, I think. Oranges are a symbol of death. And we saw it in Breaking Bad with Beneke. We saw the oranges fall onto him. He didn't end up dying, but Breaking Bad has even used oranges before. Many other shows have used oranges to symbolize death as well. So I don't know if that means poor death. Death is coming for poor Carol, which is highly unlikely, or if that's some sort of, you know, portending of Walter's death, or, you know, if it's just there to kind of throw an Easter egg in there for the people who look for such things. But the oranges are definitely something that I immediately thought, uh-oh, there's oranges. That's going to be an issue.
Well, this is from @drinkingasoda on Twitter. Speaking to your point, wants to know, does Walt's neighbor Carol freak out because she thought Walter was dead? Is it possible that the world thinks that Heisenberg is dead?
Well, it's very possible, right? Because he's under an assumed name. He's been living in New Hampshire with a completely different look. And so, you know, it's very possible that he's somehow staged his own disappearance or death. I mean, he's clearly not been brought to justice, right? So you know, how he then disappeared from the public eye, it's not sure, but Carol definitely knows. And Carol didn't move away, so I don't think the media attention was that horrible. If I lived next door to something that ended up getting that out of control, I might have left, and she's still there. So I'm not 100% sure exactly what, you know, what happened with Carol, but she did look like she'd seen a ghost, that's for sure, drinking a soda.
Yes, yes, well put, drinking a soda. All right, so then after we get the cold open, we come back to the famous barbecue, and Hank, in a compromised position, reading the book, or we assume reading the book, and we assume he finished everything up that he had to do in there, and he comes back out and abruptly wants to leave the party. Alan McKee says, poor Hank, he was on that toilet longer than Murtaugh in Lethal Weapon 2. Is that fair?
I think that's fair. He was on it like, yeah, it seems like six to 9 months for sure, or almost a year. So, yeah, I think that he's probably beaten anybody. That's really funny.
He's been on the toilet longer than it took to get to the flash forward. So that's actually quite a bit of time. So so they abruptly leaves, and you know, this was well done by Hank. He really, you know, played the scene very well, that he was really anxious. And there's even a great shot, like when Walt like tries to like open, like puts his hand on the door. You feel like does he know something? So it's a very tense scene when Walter comes out of the bathroom.
Yeah, it did a really good job, I think, of making the audience feel the way Hank was feeling, and that was important, I think, because, you know, they did that with cinematography, with the kind of the way they were switching from the views of different cars that Hank was seeing on the highway. But I think it's important that you really understand kind of the emotions that that character was experiencing. It wasn't just an oh shit literal moment. It was definitely a moment where a lot of things were rushing to him, and he was very, very upset. So I thought they did a really bang up job across the board. And Dean Norris was really great, like you said, in those scenes. He really nailed it.
Did you think Hank was going to potentially die on the way home? Did you think that was potentially, he was going to either have a heart attack or crash the car, and that this is how Heisenberg was going to get off the hook, that Hank was going to die with that information?
The thought did cross my mind for a minute, and then I thought, the Breaking Bad is not a show that does things cheaply like that. That would be denying us so much. Like, even just the little scene that we got in the garage tonight wouldn't have been possible if that were the route that they took. And obviously there's a lot more to come. So I definitely thought that, and then I thought, that's just not what this show would do. And if had they done it, I would have thought, something's not going right with this. You know, I would have given him the benefit of the doubt, like, but it would have,
this is what you came
concerned
up with after all this time, that Hank's
right
getting a car accident.
He's gonna have, well, he strained himself on the toilet for enough time that he wore out his ticker. What are you gonna do?
That happened on The Sopranos.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we get to see Walt back at the car wash, and it looks as though, like, Walt has adjusted to an honest life, and he's even taken like a lot of the business sense that he's learned in the meth game and is applying it to the car wash.
Yeah, let's put those Pine air fresheners right up there by the 5-hour energy. It just makes too much sense, right by the register.
I think so. And so he gets a visit from Lydia here. She wants to come and talk about what's going on in the business. Now, we didn't get to see anything about the drug game in this episode. So what's going on there? Is Landry just running this operation by himself?
Yeah, I think Lance, a.k.a. Landry, a.k.a. Todd, may be, in fact, the chemist that's involved. And he's down to 68% and falling. So he may have even outsourced it to someone else at this point. Because he just is making enough money that he doesn't care about it anymore. I have a feeling he's got a bunch of those Vominos pest guys kind of in the game that he's taught kind of how to do it, and that's where they're at. So there's definitely some element of that, you would think.
So I don't understand why Lydia is so concerned about the quality of the meth that's being produced by Landry.
I think there's some discussion about the yield, like when we get to the Say My Name episode, when Walter is pitching, you know, to the other drug, you know, cartel, you know, or, you know, drug organization, you know, you're going to get a better yield out of this because my product is of a higher quality. I think the higher quality the meth, the less it takes for people to feel that they want the way they want to feel. So, you know, they can get a lot more sales out of a higher quality meth. If it's lower quality, it's going to take more, you know, of the meth to get the people where they want to go with it. And as a result, you're not going to get as many sales out of it. So I think that might be why she's concerned.
Boy, Antonio, you seem to know a lot about this crystal meth, and you are up and podcasting at an ungodly time on the East Coast.
Yeah, there's absolutely, that is just coincidental. Those two things have nothing to do with one another. I read a lot is what it is.
Okay. All right. Fair
and
enough.
That's what keeps me awake for sure.
Fair enough. So what kind of danger do you think Lydia presents to Walt? Like, do you think that Walt is in some sort, like what could Lydia do to Walt to try to, you know, that big deal, like the meth isn't up of the highest quality. You know, Mike is gone. All his henchmen are gone. I mean, is Lydia a real danger to Walt?
Well, she's definitely a liability. And for the most part, because she's kind of crazy, right? She's very skittish. She's very self-protective. If at any point she feels threatened, with her life or her, you know, her daughter's life or anything like that.
Can I cast?
She is going to do.
Can I cast we did on our preview podcast where we cast Lydia, or I'm sorry, we cast all of the Breaking Bad characters with people from Survivor and Big Brother. I'd like to cast Lydia.
Go, please.
I would like to cast Lydia with, Lydia in the reality TV version of Breaking Bad will be played by Eliza Orlins.
I think that's perfect.
It is perfect.
That is accurate. That is accurate for so many reasons. And
Lydia, I mean, she looks like her, and then I think she is like her.
Yeah, and I think that's a compliment to Lydia, actually. And so that, but Lydia is also very smart.
Like, you know, what is this, Walt? It's an effing stick. You call this crystal meth? It's a 68% quality. Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go ahead.
No, it's very good, and it's accurate. I mean, she's very smart too, and you know, Eliza is very smart, and I think that those are lethal combinations. It's just being smart and a little bit, you know, off balance or a little bit prone to blowing up at people, and you get Lydia on the island, Lord knows what would happen.
Yeah, Scott St. Pierre says 68% quality can be found at Ross for Less. And actually, it should be the tagline of this podcast, 68% quality at Rob Has a Podcast. Well, Landry is producing all these shows behind the scenes. All right, so anything else from the car wash? I do want to say, I thought this was very interesting that Walt basically, for the first time in I don't know how long, completely honest with Skylar. Skylar asks, who's that? And he's like, oh, it's a work person. She wants to try to get me back into the business. And I was very surprised to see Walt not lying to Skylar about something.
Yeah. And one thing too, that this was a verification that Walt was in fact out of the game. You know, as we left season 5-8, he told Skylar he was out, but we weren't sure. You know, with Walt, you just can never tell because he really is a pathological liar. And we'll talk about shortly the whopper that he threw on Jesse in this episode. But, you know, he's a pathological liar. So for him to say to Skylar in the last episode of the first part of the season, I'm out, we didn't really know that. So that was kind of one of those lingering questions that this really hammered home. He was, in fact, out. And he was being honest with Skylar. I also thought it was interesting that Skylar was really on point with her analysis of Lydia. And she really smacked her down on the way out the door. Do not come back here.
Yeah, there you go. So then the next scene that happened was Hank gets all the files, come there. We have our nice montage, which we both appreciated. It's basically Hank could have just watched one of the many, everything you need to know about Breaking Bad in 9 minutes videos that are on YouTube. That would have saved him a lot of time, but instead he gets all of the files, delivered to him. I mean, anything else on Hank?
No, he probably felt pretty terrible looking at all that evidence and seeing basically everything that's happened in the Albuquerque drug game over the course of 2 years and realizing it's all connected to his brother-in-law right under his nose.
Yeah. And Hank's coffee looked pretty good. I wanted to go have some coffee after I saw Hank having some delicious, you know, Hank looked like he was having a good time.
Did you catch the, in that montage, there was a mirror that he had in his garage for his own personal beer.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty hilarious. It was almost as good as the Los Pollos Hermanos logo. I think that we'll see that among Breaking Bad fan art for years to come. That was really, really funny to me.
Yeah, Hank looked like me, you know, working around my office, getting my fantasy draft board ready, drinking coffee. Like, oh, okay, this guy looks good. Okay, let me look at this footage.
Hank's a big fan of the running back strategy this year.
Is he? Is he? He was right under his nose the whole time. So, all right. So I want to talk about this quite a bit. A very extensive. Now, what are the names of Jesse's two friends? I know that I feel like that there are many of Jesse's friends, and I want to make sure I am naming them correctly.
This is Badger and Skinny Pete that we
Badger
saw.
Badger and Skinny Pete, of course.
This is I thought of you immediately, Rob, because this is an extended Star Trek rant, and I do not really know from whence I speak. This is a tie-in with Q and the other
Star
Trek. Well,
there's a lot of Star Trek I want to talk about. And it's been very underreported in the history of the podcast, my appreciation for the Star Trek. So now Badger apparently is a has a almost like we saw on Mad Men last season,
right?
When
Paul Kinsey
had a spec script for a Star Trek episode. So now here's Badger's spec script for a Star Trek episode, which is almost like is that Stand By Me, where they have the blueberry pie eating contest?
I think it is. Yeah.
So there's a blueberry pie eating contest on the Enterprise. Now, a couple things about this. There were three people in the pie eating contest. It's Kirk, Spock, and Chekhov, which is very interesting because Chekhov is not so much if you were going to write a Star Trek story, you would think it would be Kirk, Spock, and McCoy in the Star Trek story. But here's Chekhov, not Sulu. Scotty is involved in over there. You know, not anybody else from the Enterprise crew. Not I guess Uhura is busy with Scotty, but do you think that for all the talk they talk about on this show about Chekhov's gun, do you think it was a coincidence that Chekhov is the Star Trek character that shows up in the pie eating contest?
That's actually a much better thing. I was just going to say that maybe Badger had some lingering Cold War, kind of resentment, and he was writing in some anti-Russian sentiment where the Russian was going to trick his way into winning. So
no,
I think
no.
Your example was probably much better.
Now, do we think that there's anything to the story, of the transporter? What happens to you when you transport? When you transport, you make yourself disappear. And every time you go on the transporter, you're basically dying and a new copy of yourself is being made. That's what happens. That's why McCoy never likes to go in the transporter. Do you think there's anything to that, especially when we're talking about Walter White? Did he fake his own death? Did he make himself disappear? Am I reading too much into this? I mean, this was for a show like Breaking Bad to spend 4 minutes on this, on Badger's Star Trek story, you would have to think that there's some significance to it.
Yeah, certainly the primary significance, other than the fact that it was very funny, is that it really just drove Jesse out of the house with his money. It really put him in a position where he just didn't even want to be around that rambling anymore. But is it more than rambling? I don't know. It's very interesting to suppose that it could be. The beginning of the pilot episode, Walter is teaching his students, and he talks about, Vince Gilligan was on the Nerdist podcast last week talking about, things that have happened in the show. And that was kind of the pitch. It's just about this man who is, transforming and, degrading himself and building himself up and breaking himself down. So there's definitely at least a metaphor there, if not some sort of signpost of something else.
Yeah. And then on top of all this, because you really could have cut this whole scene out of the episode. It really didn't really help move the story forward too much at all, other than, Jesse's back on the pot. But in this universe, now, they're talking about Star Trek, the original series. Does Star Trek, the Next Generation exist as we know it? And does Jesse realize that Q is Jane's dad? Does Badger know that? Do we have a scene where Badger and Q are in the same place?
That's a very valid point. And at one point, I did laugh when Skinny P took serious issue with the kind of berries they were eating, because that was a reference to Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
And that really wouldn't fly. And the fact, not only was Badger up on his Star Trek lore, but Skinny P was up on it enough to call him out on it. That was just super funny to me. So Voyager apparently exists in this universe. So you would think that the TNG would exist. And then what happens from there, I don't know.
Yes, I would listen to Badger and Skinny Pete's Star Trek podcast, for the record. I think it would be good. Is there anything to Chekhov's guts being transported into space? I mean, I don't know.
That's the thing. If you introduce Chekhov's guts in the first act, they have to come back.
Yes.
So I don't exactly know where that's going.
All right. So then Jesse ends up going to Saul's waiting room, which is like so ridiculous, over the top of how loud Saul has to play the Muzak. I mean, don't you think Saul's business is odd in that his clients are like Gustavo Fring, Walter White, like billion-dollar, you know, drug people, and then like, you know, people like going to like the small claims court, like people that have like DUIs.
Yeah, you almost wonder if he doesn't have this sort of TV lawyer thing as a cover, right? Because he's got these clients who pay him. You know, I think in the first half of the season we saw that his cut from each cook was something in the neighborhood of $18,000. And so it makes you wonder if he's just using all of these personal injuries and neck braces and things like that as an elaborate cover for what is a multi-million-dollar legal business. Yes. No one takes him seriously, so no one's ever going to look deeper into him. They just think he's a shyster.
But, I mean, it's not like Saul seems to have, like, other guys that work for him that, like, when, like, the guy who's there with, like, his family, his wife and, like, two kids who doesn't look like he has very much money is sitting there in the waiting room. I mean, what happens with his case? Does Saul go and represent him, or does Saul sort of farm that out to somebody?
Yeah, it's a good question. It seems like Saul is the only, it's a one-man shop. So it definitely seems like that's something that Saul would probably go represent him. Or, you know, he's not exactly the most ethical of attorneys. So it's entirely possible that he milks those little clients for the small dollars they're worth and never does very good by them.
Yeah. And you would think that Saul could have a more attractive masseuse come by.
Well, it's interesting. All of this is leading up to the rumored spinoff show that has been talked about with Saul Goodman. So, you know, there's a lot of interesting things that we could see from Saul. Maybe he has a certain kind of, you know, you've seen his receptionist, you know, lawyers are famous for hiring very attractive receptionists. So maybe Saul just has a type.
Yeah. Okay. And we also know that there is a no smoking marijuana policy at Saul Goodman's.
Yeah, that to me struck. I did think that was very interesting when we've got Yule sitting there looking at Jesse pulling out a pack of cigarettes, because if you'll remember, that's who shop, you know. Yeah, exactly. So that was an interesting callback, and it made me wonder if anything was going to be said there. No, Jesse was just going to spark a J right there in the waiting room. No big deal.
Right. Snide Snidington on Twitter wants to know, what do you think happens to Saul by the end of this season? Do you have any theories as to what Saul – I mean, if we're going to set Saul up for a spinoff series, two things. One, where do you think he ends up? And number two, could this just be the greatest setup ever for Saul getting whacked at some point during this season, that they were just stringing us along with this?
That could be. I hope that's not the case. I mean, I don't see the need. I mean, you could say if you kill the comic relief of the show, you're really taking the show to a level where people are like, okay, at this point now, it's on, because the jester has died. But I think that otherwise, I think Saul is going to come out of this relatively unscathed. I think the lesson that he's always put forth is he tries to stay out of it as much as possible. And, you know, he was really angry about that lawyer that they, you know, that Mike chose to do business with in the first part of the season. And he was a no good guy and he was doing everything wrong. So I think Saul's been in this game long enough that he knows how to stay, you know, keep his head out of it. And he was been ready to kind of skip town at a moment's notice on a couple of occasions. So I think Saul will be okay.
I always notice on Breaking Bad when something is an unusual color. Saul's shirt was like a really, really bright green. Like it was almost hard to ignore. Did you notice that? Any significance, especially as he was trying to argue for why Jesse should keep all that money?
Yeah, green's the color of money, baby. Yeah, absolutely. And I thought it was interesting, the first kind of glimpse we got of Saul was just his arm with that French cuff, like out the door, like, let him in, bring him in. So I thought that, you know, that whole arm thing with that green sleeve was very interesting. And, you know, I definitely think that that's the color of money. That's Saul Goodman for sure. And I mean, you're talking about a guy who self-professed changed his name to a Jewish name because he thought people would rather have a Jewish lawyer.
Yeah.
You know, like this is a guy who has no qualms about doing what he thinks is best for his business. So yeah, green is money all the way.
So Jesse talks to Saul about he wants to give half the money to the kid that died on the, by the train and the other half to Mike's granddaughter. What's the name of the kid that died in the train? He's got a cool name.
Oh, what is his name? It's like Brian. Is it Brian something?
I don't think it's Brian.
It's not coming to me.
I'm sure.
Yeah, it's not coming to me.
It's not important.
Yeah.
And does he leave any money to the tarantula?
Oh God, don't say that. I don't do well with spiders and things of that sort. So I sure hope not. That's Chekhov's tarantula at this point. I mean, I think Todd kept that tarantula and he kept the bottle that had the prints on it. So yeah. I'll be interested to see if that ever comes back up again.
Hold
I don't
on.
Know if he was keeping that as a trophy or
yes. This just in, Lee Hewitt reports Q was actually in Voyager. Oh my God, I didn't know. I remember when he showed up on Deep Space Nine, but I did not, I'm sure that was, I want to interview Badger and Skinny Pete and ask them if they saw that episode, if they recognized Jane's dad.
Breaking Star Trek news. Who would have thought that you'd be breaking Star Trek news in this podcast?
Yes. Is it possible that Q could have brought the berries back from the Delta Quadrant and brought them back in time to have them on the Enterprise in time for the pie eating contest?
Yes.
Ah, perfect. Is it possible that Q could have put the cigarette with the rice in and taken it out of Jesse's pack and then given Brock the Lily of the Valley?
That is, I think, a slightly more believable explanation than we were led to, you know, accept on the first part of last season. So
I think so too. What's with Jesse? What's his problem? Why can't Jesse just lighten up a little bit? I don't like seeing Jesse moping around like this.
I found this particularly interesting, right? Because he's had very valid reasons to be down in the past. But as we left the end of, you know, season 5A, he wasn't that bad. He had gotten away from Walt. He had gotten that out of the game. And one day Walt showed up at his doorstep and gave him $5 million and I don't know if having all that money really came rushing back to him. We get some sense that, you know, Walt manipulating him when he didn't want to give him the money was definitely something that resonated with him because Jesse's ready to call it blood money right away. But he's really in a dark place. All the Star Trek talk maybe has really taken the wind out of his sails. I don't know.
You think that Badger and Skinny Pete have really depressed Jesse?
Yes, and hopefully the listeners of this podcast don't feel the same way after listening to us talk about it. But I don't know. It struck me as odd because he's had very valid reason in the past, and some time has passed. So I don't know if he's upset over the death of the kid or if he, you know, is just kind of really, by taking a step back, had time to think about everything. But he's very, very upset and probably worse than he's ever been, I think, almost. And
yeah.
It's very disturbing.
Yeah. Maybe Jesse needs to get on the antidepressants a little bit here.
Yeah. Why can't Walter learn how to just, you know, cook some Prozac?
Yeah. Even at 68%, I think it would help. So he brings the money there, and then very quickly thereafter, we see Saul open up his drawer. He's got like 19 different flip phones, and he calls up Walt. And is Walt getting chemotherapy during this? I didn't understand what was going on. That's what Nicole said she thought it was.
Yeah, I think that was a chemo drip for sure. And I think that was kind of a one of those moments where you didn't realize initially what you were looking at, and then he's in a clinic with other people and he's on a drip. I think that's chemo for sure.
Yeah. So here comes Walt. He comes back with the bags of money that he brought in the season 5.1 finale, very reminiscent of that. And he brings back the money. Jesse didn't seem to be that scared this time. In the 5.1 finale, Jesse had a gun. He was very frightened. This time he's like, well, whatever.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder whether it's that Jesse feels like he doesn't have anything to lose, or if he just kind of almost expected this to happen. You know, he went to Saul. It wasn't really a good plan. It was just all he really could think to do. And then I don't think he was very surprised at all to see Walt darkening his door again. Yeah. He certainly wasn't scared.
And aren't Badger and Skinny Pete like, hey, what gives, man? You're giving money to every freaking person you ever met, and you're not hooking us up? And we've been your friends for 5 years? In reality, like a year and 3 months?
Skinny Pete probably wants a nice keyboard. You know, Badger could probably use some new toboggan hats. There's definitely, you know, some things I'm sure both of those guys would want. So I don't know why Jesse hasn't treated his friends. But then again, they come over to his house and smoke pot and just hang out, and, you know, with his giant TV and his giant speakers.
Life
is pretty good for those guys.
Right. So Jesse wants to bring money to the kid that died, which Walt says this is not a good idea. And then also to Mike's granddaughter. And Jesse says, look, I think that Mike's not around, because I don't think you would have made a move on those guys if Mike was around. And Walt basically swears up and down, I had nothing to do with this. Mike is fine as far as I know. And Jesse does not look to be believing Walt during any of this.
Yeah, and Walt could have told Jesse that Mike was happy and he had taken him to a farm and he finally had room to run around and play, and he was just going to be so happy forever. That's the kind of like dirty little lie that Walt was telling Jesse, and Jesse just, you know, agreed to believe it. But it was pretty clear that he wanted no part of believing that.
Yeah, very, very, very interesting to see that, because I feel like a big theme of this episode was like, you know, Walt for a long time has gotten away with all of his lies. And I'm starting to feel like people are starting to really draw a line on Walt's BS. Whether it's Jesse here, then Hank later on not really buying what Walter is saying about, you know, any explanation he may be giving about all of this. And I feel like that, you know, Walter is really at a point where feels very confident about everything he does and not used to people not believing him or his lies not working.
Yeah, I mean, but he really has built a house of cards in a lot of respects. I mean, he's manipulated his way into so much. I think the problem when you do things like that is one false turn, you know, you're going to get found out. And I think the Mike stuff, when you know, Jesse realized that Saul hadn't spoken to Mike either. I think Jesse probably was already on high alert. So these people are also getting kind of used to Walt, especially Jesse. He's been lied to him enough, you know, now that he's not inclined to believe him at this point. And yeah, I think that's definitely a motif I think we're going to see through and through, although we've seen it from Skyler in the past. So
yeah, I feel
it makes sense we would see it from others.
One of Walt's tells is also like you ask Walt a question like, did you kill Mike? I'm like, no, I did not. Absolutely not. I did not kill him at all. But then he proceeds to like, but, you know, the fact that he's dead does provide that is a good thing if you think about it. Like, it's like. Like telling you, like, you know, that he had nothing to do with it, but, you know, we should be thinking about the positive that this thing did happen that I had no responsibility for.
Let's say that I did it. So what, right? Because it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, so Jesse not buying anything. It's going to be interesting to me to see how we keep Jesse involved with these episodes, because right now his story does not seem to be tied to Walter in any way.
Yeah, and he's been kind of in the wilderness before on other seasons, and so he's definitely the wild card, because he knows more about Walt and what they've done than anyone. He also knows the cook. I mean, I think some people would say that his aimlessness, you know, a good solution for giving him a purpose in life would be to get him back in cooking for Lydia. But of course, Jesse's not going to want to do that. So, you know, he has no sense of direction. I think he's the classic kind of person that with just a little bit of a wrong turn is going to just spill everything. So, you know, I think the one people worried about Walt killing isn't Hank so much as it's Jesse, because Jesse holds so much knowledge about how everything went down and is, of course, the key witness. So yeah. Right now, Hank doesn't have a ton of evidence. Hank has a book that has some initials scribbled in it that he found at Walt's house. That's really what he's got. He's going to have to put the case together if he wants to.
Could Jesse potentially testify against Walt?
Yeah, I don't think we'll get there. I mean, I don't think that's what the show is gonna do. But he certainly could. That would make for some pretty funny courtroom scenes.
Yeah,
but I don't see it. I don't think it'll happen.
Yeah. We end up with the Walter ends up getting sick. Of course, we're having dinner with Walt Jr. Somebody was asking me on Twitter, why does Walt Jr. need a later curfew? I don't know what he's up to.
Yeah, he's got that friend Lewis. He's been mentioned a couple of times now. I think one time he took a call from Lewis at Hank's house, you know, and he was like, oh, it's Lewis. Hey, Lewis. And he was mentioning Lewis again with regard to his high school guidance counselor. So I don't know. Maybe he's falling in with a rough crowd, or maybe he's being set up. It's not really 100. Maybe he's just a normal teenager, Rob. We really don't know.
Yeah. Okay. So then once we get to Walt realizes that he doesn't have the book, he starts to put two and two together about Hank, and he goes out and looks at his car and finds the tracking device. Now, was the tracking device on Walt's car before he went to go visit Jesse?
Or before he went to get the money from Saul, right? Like, it's a, you know, there may be, you know, two key trips there. And the Saul one's the one I would be most worried about if I were, you know, if I were Walt. The Jesse, that connection's been well established. And, you know, Hank always assumed that Jesse was the one who had called Marie or called about Marie in the hospital. And, you know, so that wouldn't be the one I was concerned about. I would be concerned about the visit to Saul, because that ties him to something that, you know, they could really come after. And Saul was Mike's lawyer too, that they've dealt with. So they know Saul. And if they think that Walt's working with him, that's just another nail in the coffin in that regard.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good question. I don't know when Hank put that on there. He probably put it on there pretty quickly.
Yeah. And then we have Jesse. Then he's like sleeping in his car. He's still driving around that same crappy car that he's had throughout the whole series. I wonder if he still has all of the cigarette butts with Jane's lipstick still in the ashtray as well. So he's like sleeping at like a hot dog stand. And then a guy says, hey, can I have some money? Jesse ends up giving him, I thought Jesse was going to give him the whole duffel bag. Instead, he gives him, how much money would you say that Jesse gave that homeless guy?
A couple grand, I think.
That homeless guy is going to be dead by the morning. Jesse did not do that guy any favors.
Yeah, I agree completely. And when he was giving him the whole bag, I thought the same thing. And I thought he's just going to end this guy's life basically immediately.
Yeah, that guy is going to be, he's not making the Saul Goodman spinoff, that guy.
Definitely not.
Yeah. So then Jesse drives around, and now all of a sudden Jesse is like, it's like that old game Paperboy, and he's throwing wads of cash around like there's nobody's business. What is Jesse doing?
Besides, I think making the news. Like, I think this is going to be news.
He's delivering the news.
Yeah, he really is delivering and making the news. Like, I really think that this is something that, you know, if this happened in any town, like all the residents on the street wake up and there's $2,000 in each one of their yards, like I think this is newsworthy. So I think this is not a good thing. And yeah, he's just feeling good. Like, it's cathartic, I guess, to just throw his money away like that.
So we've talked about Jesse potentially being a liability. Do we think that Walt is going to come and kill Jesse at some point in these final 7 episodes now?
I sure hope not. I'm not ready to say that he won't, but I could see him getting to that point, but I sure hope that's not the case. I really hope that Walter is coming back to protect Jesse rather than, you know, off him, but it's certainly possible.
I was thinking about this last night. Do you think we ever see Walt cook meth again in the final seven episodes of the series?
That's a good question. I don't think that we do. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see any reason to. I mean, they have so much money. I mean, unless he gets back in to fix the operation, but why? What could they entice him with? Unless they kidnapped his family and said, "Hey, you need to cook, or you'll never see Walt Jr. again." I don't see any reason why he would ever need to. And it made me a little sad. I like when they cook.
Yeah, and one thing is they had so many good cooking sequences in the recent, the season 5.1 that it's going to be tough to top the On a Clear Day and the Crystal Blue Persuasion and all those.
That was
different
very
cooks.
Very good,
but I will say Lydia mentioned, her kind of vague threat to Walt, like this is a big deal, there's a lot of moving parts. And if she's been dealing with people in Czechoslovakia and in Eastern Europe, there's clearly some interests there that are different than the Mexican drug cartel interest, but they're just as dangerous in just a different way. So I don't know if any of those chickens are going to come home to roost for Walt or not, but it's entirely possible that they will, because he's essentially messing with other people's ability to make money, and she can tie him to that. So there's a very possible, connection there that's something that will come into play. I don't think that was a vague threat from Lydia. We haven't really seen her be that off base. She's crazy, but in a way that's very realistic. It comes from a very natural place.
Yeah. This is from at BB Fan Jack. He was the one who says, "Does Walt Jr. really need his curfew extended? Not buying it." So maybe he thinks that Walt Jr. is up to something.
Yeah, I don't really know. He's mentioned this Lewis a couple times. I'm telling you, this could be something that comes out in one way or another.
Okay. So I don't have anything else from the episode. Is there anything else that we did not cover?
The only thing that I found interesting, and it reminded me, it was again from the Gus and Walt kind of parallels, is when Walt is standing in Hank's driveway just glad handling those DEA agents, like, "Oh, when's your kid's baseball game?" And, "Oh, 10 o'clock, first pitch, huh?" Just very much in the same mode as Gus, just being buddy-buddy with the DEA, like right up to him. And I thought that was very fascinating, because not only did it piss Hank off, it was definitely that parallel. And I didn't understand, why was the kid in the background with the remote control car the whole time? Like, what was going on with that? I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, I don't know. What is the significance of the remote control car? Like, you would have thought at some point, like, somebody would have, like, stepped on the car or, like, yeah, I don't know what any significance of the remote control car. And I'm sure there is some, but I can't figure out what it is.
Yeah, and I can't either. So that was interesting to me. Like, I don't think it was definitely not there on accident. So I wonder why it was there.
Yeah.
That was it for me. I did think it was interesting. We missed it at the beginning when Hank is coming out of the bathroom and he walks out onto the porch, that you hear Marie say to Walt, "You are the devil."
Yeah.
Did you catch that?
Yes,
yeah,
I
that
did.
Was really
very
funny
good.
To me.
Yeah. And going back to Hank. When Hank puts everything together, what do you think are the top three things Hank is the most pissed off about?
He mentioned the killing of the nine witnesses right away.
Yes.
Like, that was something that really upset him, and that is nine murders. So that really pissed him off. But he also seemed to be pretty upset that he thought Walt was cowardly. Like, he thought that he was being a coward, and I think that really pissed him off for some reason.
Also, the calling him on the phone and saying that Marie had gone to the hospital. He seemed upset about. I guess he hasn't even really put together the fact that he got shot. It seems like with the brothers that were only around to come after Heisenberg, the cousins.
Right, and I don't know fully if he'll know if they were coming at Fring or if he feels like they were coming at Heisenberg. He may pin that on Walt. He may pin some of it on Walt. He may not pin all of it. He may, in his mind, thinks that Walt started as an underling to Fring and that ultimately Walt became the kingpin, but wasn't, Hank knows the drug game, so he knows how it works. He may not have thought that Walt was always in charge, but he definitely feels like some of those key moments were on Walt, and he's right to think that.
And also, breaking news at this hour, Antonio, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, is ordering change in how some drug crimes are charged to reduce inflexible mandatory minimum sentences. Will this have any bearing on the Walter White case?
Definitely not. Okay. I can tell you as an attorney that that would be more, you know, in the line of he's trading so highly that, you know, he could probably buy and sell Eric Holder a million times over. And, you know, if he wants the laws changed, he'll just find a way to found a super PAC and, you know, get some people elected. That's the level Walter White's at. He is in the empire business for sure.
The empire business. All right. So I think that's going to do it for our Breaking Bad podcast. And Antonio, this was a lot of fun. Looking forward to doing this every week.
Absolutely, Rob. Thank you very much.
All right. So then our next podcast is going to be on Wednesday. Kurt Clark will be checking in from Hong Kong as we discuss this week's episode of Whodunit. I still have not watched it yet. Looking forward to watching that. That's going to be on Wednesday. If you missed it earlier tonight, we did our full Big Brother recap. And then we have on Thursday night, it's our Big Brother post-eviction show with Ian Terry. So there you go. You have time for one more question from Brian Scally.
Of course, for Brian Scally, I have time for as many questions as Brian has.
He says, there's a theory that's floating around about Walt picking up a trait or traits of the people he kills, placing a towel on the floor in the flash forward. Walt uses Skyler's maiden name. Does Walt kill Skyler? Hold on. Did Walt kill Skyler or Siler? Because I don't think this is Heroes, where you go ahead and now you start to absorb the powers of the people that you come up upon. Are you buying that Walt absorbs something from every person that he kills?
I'm trying to wrap my mind around the possible tie-in with the Star Trek film franchise and Zachary Quinto and Heroes and to Walter White. And I just
with Siler in a pie-eating contest?
Yeah, I don't want to think about it. It hurts my brain. But there's probably some truth to that, right? Like he whether it's literal or metaphoric, I think in the case of Gus, it's definitely meant to be metaphoric.
Yeah.
Like he's taking Gus metaphorically, but he uses, you know, Skyler's maiden name. You would think if he were trying to hide out, that's something that could be pretty easily tagged to him as an alias. It's not that, you know, it's not like he changed his name to something outrageous. It's just something that's connected to him. So, you know, I don't know. I think a lot of people assume that's going to happen, but he doesn't really have good reason to kill Skyler at this point.
No.
He's got other enemies that are much greater and much more dangerous to him, and Lydia and possibly Jesse and Hank. Skyler's pretty far down the list. She's essentially complicit in all of his actions at this point.
I mean, could potentially Hank get to Skyler and say, look, I'll help you, I'll get save the kids. That all you got to do, you got to testify against Walt. And then she's going to go on the witness stand and she's the key witness against Walt.
I guess that's possible. And then Walt's journey would be some very complex one where he would try to take her out. In the case of the flash forward, I just don't
see us
being.
I'm not buying it. I don't think so.
Yeah, I just don't see that we're being set up for that.
Okay.
Like, I don't see that.
All right. Well, Antonio, thank you very much. Thank you for staying up so late and talking about nonsense with us. Always a pleasure. You could follow Antonio on Twitter. He's at AC Mazzaro. There you go.
That's correct. Right there in the downstream. There you go.
There you go. All right, everybody. So if you want to subscribe, if you're watching this on YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel by clicking the subscribe button. Or if you listen to the audio feed and you want to check out the video, you can watch it at robiswebsite.com/YouTube. Have a great week, everybody. We want to hear some of your theories in the comments on robhasawebsite.com. And hope you have a great week. Take care, everybody. Bye.